Hi, good morning. My name is Carrie Johnson. I'm a researcher at the Fenway Community Health Center. That's a community health center primarily serving the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender populations in the Boston area. Specifically, I work for the Fenway Institute, which is a research institute within the Fenway Community Health Center. And what I'd like to talk to you about today is the effectiveness of respondent-driven sampling to recruit minority and hard-to-reach MSM, men who have sex with men, for STD-HIV behavioral surveillance. And I'd like to thank my collaborators, of course, on this project. That includes Dr. Matthew Mimiaga and Sari Reisner, who are here, and also Ashley Tate, who wasn't able to make the conference, Kevin Cranston, the AIDS director at the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, David Novak, who was with MDPH and who is now at the CDC, and Dr. Kenneth Mayer, the principal investigator on this particular project. Today, I'd like to go over the brief objectives and a brief overview of respondent-driven sampling, presenting our study findings, and then when there's time, I'd like to both present the strengths and limitations and potential applications of RDS, and also I'd be interested in, during the questions or discussions, either during this session or afterwards, to talk with anyone who has also experience with RDS. One thing I'd like to ask just very quickly, who here is familiar with respondent-driven sampling as a recruitment or sampling strategy? And who here has experience applying RDS as a recruitment or sampling strategy? Okay, see, how many hands applying? Okay, all right, great. And just very quickly, your application? Okay, great. So what I'd like to do in talking about the survey is how we applied RDS specifically to recruit a diverse population of men for a behavioral survey. And I'll talk about some of those, the ways that we chose to limit that sampling strategy for our purposes. So the present study assessed the ability of RDS to recruit a diverse population of men who have sex with men in the Boston area. By the end of the presentation, participants will be able to describe RDS and its implications for accessing difficult-to-reach populations for STD-HIV surveillance and interventions. Briefly, I'm sure everyone is aware of MSM and the risk for STDs and including HIV. MSM increasingly in the U.S. represent a disproportionate share of new cases of STDs, including infectious syphilis and drug-resistant gonorrhea. And they're also a hard-to-reach population, meaning that in the general population, the behavior is relatively rare, and their behaviors are often stigmatized, criminalized, and or forbidden. So that makes doing any kind of surveillance effort for this population and many hard-to-reach populations particularly challenging. And the one of the things that's been very attractive about RDS is that it potentially can sample, provide you an unbiased sample, an unbiased population estimate of a difficult to reach population. And the ways that it can do it are RDS is a relatively new chain referral sampling strategy. That means that it's similar to snowball sampling. It was developed beginning around 1997 by Douglas Heckathorn at Cornell University, and it since uses social networks of participants themselves to engage other members of the target population using these dual incentives of peer-based recruitment and financial compensation. What that means is that you rely on the members of your target population to recruit others into your sample, and you're using dual the incentives by compensating both the recruiters and their recruits. And RDS has been applied all over the world to difficult-to-reach populations, including sex workers, injection drug users, and men who have sex with men. As I was saying, one of the things that makes RDS particularly attractive is that given its theoretical assumptions, it can potentially provide unbiased estimates of the underlying population of interest if certain conditions are met. The reason I want to emphasize that for my presentation is that for our purposes, we used RDS as a sampling strategy for a specific set of circumstances that did not meet the conditions by which we would generalize to the larger population. Nevertheless, it was very effective at reaching the population that we were interested in surveying. But these conditions are important to acknowledge for anyone embarking on RDS, meaning that it's not just doing a program evaluation or doing a project without building in your program evaluation. If you don't build in your program evaluation from the start, then you have a lot of catch-up to do or you might have some challenges with your data later on. So I just want to make reference to the target population, the recruitment methods, and the data analysis. Those are all domains that should be considered if you're going to apply RDS rigorously. The target population should contain members who are willing and able to recruit others and there should be reciprocal social ties sufficient to reach all members and to sustain recruitment. What this means is that if you're going to target your difficult to reach population, you need to identify a target population that is willing and able to recruit others. If you have a target population where people are unwilling to recruit others, then RDS is not appropriate for that particular target population. Also, there need to be reciprocal social ties. That means that the person who is recruiting and the person who is recruited, they know one another. That's a condition for RDS. And that also, when you think of your target population, it needs to be able to be reached, meaning that you might think, okay, I want to sample all of the sex workers in Washington, D.C., but RDS may only be able to reach a certain subset of those sex workers. So if you do apply RDS, you might need to think quite a bit about the parameters of your target population. Also, there need to be sufficient social ties for your target population in order to sustain your recruitment. So sampling begins with initial seeds. These are initial eligible participants for your study. The seeds must be willing, able, and sufficiently motivated to recruit other members of the social network from the target population. And the examples of the recruits can be friends, relatives, and sex partners, depending on your predetermined eligibility criteria. And so the seeds are important because they launch your project. Once your seeds are enrolled, they're eligible enrolled into your project, then they're given a set of recruitment coupons that's usually between 3 and 4 and encouraged to recruit others from their social network. The seeds are then compensated for each participant that they successfully enroll into the study, and then each subsequent recruits are called considered waves, and those are likewise given the recruitment coupons and encouraged to recruit other people into the study. So that's the dual incentive. Both they represent the seeds are peers, they're recruiting their peers into the study, they're provided compensation for recruiting, and then those subsequent recruits are also compensated both for participating in the study and for recruiting others. These are some specific conditions. Given sufficient numbers of seeds, recruitment rates, and recruitment waves, the sample will eventually attain what's called equilibrium. That's a composition of your sample that is independent of the seeds composition, meaning that you might sample originally 10 seeds, and they represent a certain subset of your population of interest. The idea is that with sufficient recruitment processes, then your subsequent recruits are going to increasingly become independent of that. And it's that independence that becomes your underlying assumption that you're sampling a population that represents the larger population from which you can make your generalizable estimations. That's equilibrium. So that kind of statistics is beyond my personal capability. So fortunately, Douglas Heckethorn and his colleagues have done a good job of putting what's called RDS analysis tool on his website, respondentdrivensampling.org. And what that can do is provide population proportions, meaning that once you upload your data set into this software, then it can do population proportion estimates, average personal network sizes, measures of association, meaning who's attached to whom in those recruitment chains, and then also some statistical significant measures, including standard errors and confidence intervals. However, your seeds represent a biased sample because they were not chosen randomly, so they would need to be removed from your final analysis of your population. For analysis, in addition to your variables of interest, you would need to collect these 3 data values as you go. And those include the personal network size, meaning that each participant, you would ask them, how many people like yourself do you know? And by like yourself, meaning those predetermined eligibility criteria. Your respondent's coupon number, meaning how did you enroll into the study, and your respondent's recruiting coupon numbers, meaning you gave them those 3 or 4 coupons, and we needed to keep track of those. Because what's interesting about this particular analysis is it doesn't analyze the individuals that participate into the study, it analyzes the recruitment matrix of everyone who is in your study. So for our particular study, between March in 2006 and May 2007, we recruited 126 Boston men who have sex with men using RDS. Our recruitment was terminated, however, prior to equilibrium to exploit this process called in-group recruitment tendencies, or homophily, optimizing our sample diversity. What that means is that we were interested in conducting a behavioral survey of a certain population, and so rather than looking to survey the generalizable population, we wanted a particular population. I'll explain who that is in just a moment. And so we terminated after we had reached our desired sample size. And all the participants completed a quantitative survey to assess STD-HIV risk behaviors, STD screening frequencies, knowledge and acceptability of partner navigation services. That particular data is not being presented here this morning. However, we do have several posters that actually outline more of that data that describes the risk behaviors, the frequencies of behaviors, and all of that. So please come to our poster sessions to learn more. Our participants were eligible if they were 18 years of age or older, Massachusetts resident, and MSM. And our seeds were recruited specifically from Fenwick Community Health if they recently presented for STD screening due to symptoms or high-risk behavior or recently had an HIV diagnosis. And so what that means is that we were interested in surveying men who were at increased risk for STDs. Either they had come in for a screening or they were concerned about a behavior. So our seeds were coming from that very population. So you can understand that we do effectively have a biased sample because we terminated prior to equilibrium because we were interested in surveying these high-risk men. And here's so this morning what I want to demonstrate is how our modified RDS was effective at finding these higher risk men in a diverse population. So with that part we're very happy about. Here in the first column, that's our seed composition. Those were 10 men. The average age was 41. As you can see, 70% were HIV positive, understandable by our eligibility where we were getting them. 60% were white, 40% were black or African American. There were no Latino Hispanic seeds, and 30% had an annual income of less than $12,000, and 80% identified as gay. So these were effectively STD patients. These were patients coming into the STD clinic. And then as we then sent them on their way to recruit men into our study, you can see that the survey then began to shift and exemplify more diversity. We have a slightly older cohort. 53% were HIV positive, 44% were white, 46% were black, 6% were American Indian or Alaska Native, 12% were Latino Hispanic. And then down here at the bottom, 63% were gay identified, 30% bisexually identified, 3% heterosexually identified. And at the very bottom, which is very interesting for this kind of study, is 13% were not out. That means that they did not had not told others that they either had sex with or were attracted to other men. And so this recruitment strategy was successful at recruiting those men. And also what's very interesting about that is 87% of those men were non-white. So what we were interested then in doing is seeing, is there any difference between our seeds and our subsequent waves? We did some statistical analyses and we found no statistical difference on a number of sociodemographic factors, age, HIV status, race, etc. However, we did find some differences between the seeds and the subsequent recruits regarding that the seeds were more likely to disclose their MSM orientation to their partners and to their healthcare providers compared to subsequent waves. So the waves we were able to recruit later on more closeted men. And the seeds were more likely to be privately insured compared to subsequent waves. And the non-white participants were more likely to have less than or equal to a high school education and make less than $12,000 annually. One thing I want to mention is that in the abstract, in the book, it says less than $2,000. That's a typo, and I did not do that. So, in our discussion, just as a final note then, in terms of what RDS can do for you, is that in our traditional recruitment strategies, which include advertising, street outreach, targeted sampling, we've traditionally been able to sample perhaps between 15 and 30% the racial and ethnic minority men who have sex with men. Using this modified RDS strategy, we were able to reach, as I had mentioned, a sample that was over 50% racial ethnic minority MSM, and also men who are lower income and men who don't necessarily identify as a man who has sex with men. So this has important implications for STD behavioral surveillance and any prevention interventions that you might be thinking specifically to more difficult to reach populations. So one final note, though, I know I have probably maybe 30 more seconds, but also I just want to mention some of the strengths and the limitations then. What that means is that it's very good at reaching difficult-to-reach populations given your parameters, but some of the concerns are that there are some specific conditions if you want to make it applicable for your population estimates, as I outlined. And then also there's issues of data analysis meaning that RDS right now isn't a very hasn't yet been fully worked out to analyze continuous variables. And then there's also questions regarding ethics, particularly for lower income populations. What are the ethics around the amount of remuneration? So thank you very much. Well, let's get to my thank you. Thank you very much.